You're listening to Australia's fastest growing podcast network. This is the Lifestyle Pod Network. You're listening to The Dream Show with Jane Theresa Anderson.
Welcome to The Dream Show. I'm Jane Theresa Anderson, and this is episode 135. Jason is my guest today. Now, as you know, when we have a guest on the show, I have no idea what the dream is going to be. The point of the show when we have a guest on it is for you to hear what happens when a person brings a dream along, when I haven't heard it before, and, well, how the process goes from there. So you'll hear Jason tell me about his dream. You'll hear us discuss the dream, explore it, interpret it, relate it to Jason's waking life, to what's happening for him. And then you'll hear us put together a dream alchemy practice to make the things that are maybe have been not so good in Jason's life good, or to make the things in Jason's life that are becoming good even better. I'm not going to give you a spoiler at this stage in the procedure. If you recognise Jason's voice, you must be an avid listener to The Dream Show, because Jason was a guest about a year ago, and he enjoyed the process so much he asked if he could contribute again. We have had two or three guests come back on the show for a second time, and we usually leave about a year between appearances to give everybody a good chance. But you'll hear here that Jason has brought a fantastic dream in, and we really enjoy getting our teeth into it, and you're going to love listening to it. As always, you'll not only understand more about Jason by the end of the show, you'll also understand a lot more about how to interpret a dream, how to explore it, how to do dream alchemy. You'll understand, you'll absorb a lot of tips about how to approach your own dreams. And as always with these things, there's always something else that's going on in someone else's life that just rings a few little bells for you and helps open your eyes to certain things. So there are many, many reasons why you will enjoy listening to Jason and I discuss his dream. And please remember, if you are enjoying the show, do think about other people out there who you know, friends, acquaintances, family, who might also be interested in just being pointed in the direction of having a little listen. So before we go over to Jason, because obviously we've pre-recorded that section, this is me coming back to all excitedly introduce the show to you, I do have to remind you that to go and visit the website. So if you want to know more about dreams or about what I do, if you want to book a consultation with me by Skype, by phone, or by email, or if you want to buy some ebooks or some books, lots happening. Just find out more about dreams, go to my website at dream.net.au, or my blog at janetheresa.com. That's Theresa without an H. And if you can't remember those, just find me on Facebook and you'll find your way through. Enough from me. Enjoy Jason's dream. Here we go. Welcome to The Dream Show, Jason.
Hello, Jane Theresa. It's lovely to be back again.
Thank you. And it is back, because we had you as a guest on the show, oh, I think it was about 9 or 10 months ago now, wasn't it?
Wow, was it that long ago? Time does just go by.
And you were such a good guest, and you were so excited and said, can I come back on again? And I said, well, we'll have to wait a little while. And then here you are. So it's lovely to have you back on the show. And of course, as always, I have no idea at all what kind of dream you're bringing to the show. So the floor is yours now, Jason.
Excellent. Well, this dream starts off in this sort of bureaucratic, organizational type building. And it has this sort of feel like the Pentagon or something. You know, there's no military guards around, but it just has this sense that it has sort of this military vibe to it. But I'm not there for military purposes, per se. I believe I'm there for an interview. Friend of mine has accompanied me, and she's in an interview, and I'm just hanging out waiting. So I start to wander around, and I find my way over to this area where there's all these suites put on display. Some office worker has brought in a smorgasbord of delectables, of chocolate, of candy-covered nuts, and their little samples just on sort of display shelves all around and I have quite a sweet tooth, so I'm in prog heaven. And as I'm going along, I discover this spot that just looks really comfortable. So I decide to crawl into one of the like display areas and take a nap. And I get all nice and bundled up, really super cozy and comfy. And I start to get self-conscious and I think, whoa, this is weird. I'm kind of on display here and for everybody to see, and I'm not really attending to what I'm here to be doing, and I should get back on task and get up and get back to work, so to speak. And that's where the dream kind of starts to morph. And instead of in this bureaucratic-like organizational building, I'm now with my little brother Emerson, and he's about 19, and he's in a bed. So it's almost as if we traded places. And I'm standing there, and I see him, and he's all snuggled up in this bed, and I realize we're in a sorority house. I look down the hall, and I see these sorority girls going kind of back and forth across the hall to the different bedrooms, and they're in their little nighties and kind of, you know, getting ready for bed and doing sorority girl stuff, being kind of 20-year-old girls, chit-chatty and gossipy. But I feel like I'm not supposed to be looking at this. I feel like I'm doing something bad. So I say to Emerson, "Hey, we gotta get out of here," but he's feeling so comfortable in that bed, he doesn't really want to move. The next thing I notice, there's one of the sorority girls peeks her head around the corner and says, "Hi." And I realize we gotta go. I said, "Hey, no, don't worry about it. We're leaving. So, we'll be out of here momentarily." And she says, "Okay." And then runs back down the hall. And then the dream morphs again. And Emerson and I are on top of this building. Whether it's a sorority house, I'm not clear, but it's sort of a Japanese style building. The roof is really ornate, and there's some sort of kind of sculpturesque pieces up top. And Emerson gets this idea, "Hey, I'm going to slide down to the bottom." And he hops down and he slides down this sort of tiled roof and drops three different levels. So he slides down one part and drops, and slides down another part and drops, and then slides and comes to the ground. And it looks like a lot of fun. I think about doing it myself, and then I have a second thought that, well, I don't have the healthiest of backs. I think it'd be best if I don't go doing those drops three times and find out I have a vertebra out of place at the bottom. So I use my 2 feet and I walk down instead. And when I get to the bottom, I can kind of sense I need to explain myself. So I tell Emerson, "Oh, I just didn't want to risk injuring my back." So I walk down. And again, the dream morphs, and now we're back in that building that has that sort of bureaucratic, military-esque organizational feel to it. There's these two security guards who seem to be monitoring a main entrance door, or doors really. I'd say there are two doors, and I want to say they're made of wood with nice sturdy handles on them. Emerson walks up and grabs what looks like a microphone just near the two security guards. And he starts to say, "Is this on? Is this live? Hello? Live? Are we live?" And I just roll my eyes because he could be a goofball like that. Well, unfortunately, the security guards don't seem to get perturbed. And I just roll my eyes. They roll their eyes. And Emerson takes a spot just in front of the two doors, And he starts speaking into this thing like he's going to give this either great monologue or maybe read a poem. And I look over at the security guards and I said, is this thing, is this being broadcast? Is this, this is live, isn't it? And they look at me, they don't say yes, but they look at me like, yeah. And so the sense is that even though there's not a lot of people on the side of the door where we are, there's a whole organization of people on the other side of the door, and that this microphone is actually projecting into that space. And Emerson just stands there like as if he knows but doesn't care, and he's just readying himself. I wonder, is he going to recite a poem? I don't think he sings. He's never sang to me before, thank goodness. Or is it a monologue? And that's kind of where the dream tapers off. I unfortunately never found out what it was that Emerson wanted to say.
How did you feel at the end, though, about the fact that, you know, the broadcast was about to happen? What was your feeling as you were watching? I mean, you've given us a good feel for the feeling, but by the end of the dream, how did you feel about it?
You know, well, I guess I added, I left off a small part that people were beginning to congregate. You know, there weren't a lot of people on that side of the door, but there were people noticing Emerson and taking interest. And so they started to gather around him, ready to hear what he wanted to say. So there was this air of expectation and a little bit of excitement. And that's basically how I felt. I felt a little bit like, oh, Emerson, you goofball. And also, like, huh, what does he have to say? What creative, I just imagined a poem was going to come out of his mouth. So I was kind of in anticipation myself.
So very exciting. I mean, it almost had the feeling that he was actually going to come out with something quite wonderful.
Yeah, it really had that sense about it. You know, he kind of prepared himself as if he was going to give this great delivery. He didn't seem to have any hesitation and a lot of self-confidence. Didn't shy away at all that there were two security guards standing just there by the microphone, and just picked it up. Hey, is this thing on? Are we live?
And yet, of course, the dream is all about you, but Emerson's really the key player in this dream, isn't he, as we look at the drama?
Yes, for sure.
And at one point in the...
I was going to say, at least my counterpart.
Yes, yeah. He was your counterpart. It's a beautiful dream. I so love it. And you probably heard, as you were telling the dream yourself, you probably heard yourself say a few things that were probably gave you some clues as to what the dream's about if you haven't thought about it already. But I love the fact that right in the middle there, now where is it? I did write this down. At one stage, in one of the morphs, right. Emerson was going, you know, taking the slide, land on the landing, take the next slide, land on the landing, take the next slide, land on the landing. And he was like, oh, wow, this is fun and I can do this. And he did. And your thought was you didn't want to take the risk because of your back. So there's, right. You know, on the one side, just in that little angle, in that little scenario, there's the risk-taking fun adventure that kind of works out regardless of what anybody else thinks. And on the other side, it's, I don't want to risk that. And you actually still get to the same place, but you get there slowly and carefully because you walk down. Maybe not as much fun, but you both arrive at the same place.
Very true.
And then it's interesting that you said you didn't want to risk your back, and the very next scene, morph three, as I've written down here, you're back at the bureaucratic kind of maybe Pentagon type place. And when you first, in the beginning of the dream, when you got to the bureaucratic Pentagon type place, you particularly noticed that it didn't have any security guards. You said, oh, it feels like the Pentagon. It's got no guards, but it's got a military vibe. Now, when we get round to Morph 3, after Emerson's done his shoot slide bit, you know, and you've done, oh, I don't want to risk my back, you turn up again at the bureaucratic building, only this time there's not only two security guards, but they play quite a key role in the dream from there on.
Yeah, it's almost as if we were past the security, or I was past the security guards at the beginning, and then somehow we're it feels like a different location overall, but that's an interesting observation. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, so at that particular part in the dream, you become more aware that you move from a question of risk and taking an action based on assessing the risk to then having two security guards around. So we go risk, security, risk, safety, danger, safety. It's just that little thing that's sitting there. So we'll come back to that later. But, you know, just looking into the dream for some polar opposites here. And one is risk versus safety.
Uh-huh.
And yet, even though, I was going to say that even though the security guards are there, we're usually quite sort of cautious of security guards, particularly military security guards, as you've described them. Even then, Emerson's quite happy to do his goofball type thing, grab the microphone, do all these things. And amazingly, the security guards are kind of happy with that too. They don't really put their full voice behind it, but they give you the wink like, yep, this is okay, this is interesting. So I don't know, on the one hand, whether Emerson didn't worry about security, whether it wasn't an issue to him that the guards were there, or whether, given that sort of security backup, he felt safe to really do the big thing. Which did it feel like to you?
It felt more to me like, despite the fact that there was someone there who might stop him from giving his monologue and his great speech, he was going to do it. So it was despite the fact rather than any sort of feeling secure about it.
That is lovely. So when you feel that feeling of despite the fact of whatever's going to happen, despite the fact of someone might stop me, I'm going to do this. It's because, as you say, it's because you do actually, a person has that approach when they do actually feel secure about something, for right or for wrong, whether they are or they aren't, safe or danger. They feel, I feel safe enough to do this, so despite what anybody may stop me, I'm going to do this, I feel secure.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
So even though you looked at him and you were like at that stage going, oh, I'm not sure about sliding down all those levels, and then I'm certainly not sure about speaking to a microphone that, oh my God, is it being broadcast live, and oh my God, number two, much bigger, are all those people going to listen? Huge risk.
Exactly. And at first I'm thinking, he doesn't really know that there's hundreds of people on the other side of that door who are going to hear him. And then I get a sense, I think he does know, and it just doesn't bother him.
That's wonderful, isn't it? And it's interesting that if you're in that position where maybe he did know that there are all these thousands of people going to listen to him, but because it doesn't bother him, it wouldn't matter whether there was nobody there, whether there was one person there, whether there were thousands of people there, because it's like it's not an issue from what you've described.
Yeah, that's true. I like how you brought that in, that it didn't matter whether there was no one there or hundreds of people there. It really didn't seem to matter to him either way.
He was
going to deliver what he had to say no matter 1, 20, 30, 0.
Yeah. He was going to say no matter 1, 20, 30, 100, whatever. So he was secure within himself. He was so secure about what he wanted to do that it didn't actually matter if anybody was listening to either endorse him or to pick him apart for what he was doing. It wasn't what he was doing was, the purpose was not to actually necessarily have anyone listen. The purpose was another purpose. He was just expressing himself and doing his thing. He wasn't doing it for the feedback from the people, and he wasn't not doing it for fear of feedback of the people. He was doing it for himself because he felt secure.
Exactly, yeah.
So if you take that thought of kind of like it doesn't matter about the audience, so to speak, even though everyone in a dream is part of a dreamer, but we'll come back to that, doesn't matter about the audience, we take that right back to the beginning, and you're going to an interview at the beginning of the dream.
Right.
And when you go to an interview, probably most of us that turn up for an interview are very, very concerned about what the audience, i.e. the interviewers, think about what's coming out of our mouths.
That's true. That's very true.
And an interview is where we either feel very secure and confident because maybe we just decide that it doesn't matter whether we get the job or not. It doesn't matter how the person responds. This is me. I'm doing my thing. I'm answering the questions. And if I fit the job, I fit the job. And if I don't fit the job, I don't fit the job. But I feel so secure in myself that it doesn't matter. What's mattered is I've turned up and I'm being myself.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I hadn't really put those two pieces together to this point.
So just sort of, you know, now we've sort of, I've suggested putting those two pieces together, just put them to one side. Because when you turned up, so you at the beginning of the dream, Jason, you turn up to a bureaucratic organisational building. You described it as far as the notes I've taken. So it's like the beginning of a dream is often, for everybody listening, if you haven't listened before or you're not up to speed with the way that I look at dreams, the dream reflects what's been on your mind consciously and unconsciously for the last 24 to 48 hours. So, Jason, just when did you have this dream?
It was either this morning or the night before. I'm pretty sure it was last, you know, this morning, this last night.
Okay, great. So what we're doing when we're looking at this dream is looking at how your dreaming brain is processing the last couple of days.
Right.
Of your conscious and your unconscious experience.
Definitely.
And it's the beginning of the dream, as you remembered it, is this feeling of bureaucratic organizational. So right at the front, it's like, okay, this is dealing with, we're processing here a feeling of how to interact with something that has felt bureaucratic and organizational to me. And it's got a military vibe. You have connections with military yourself?
Not really. I work for a pretty large organization that has military endeavors, but I work on the commercial side.
Okay, so that's great. So it's a little bit of a personal symbol, but not majorly.
Right. The one thread that does kind of come in there, who knows how dreams work exactly. My little brother Emerson is in the military.
Ah, okay. Oh, that's very interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, he's in the Marine Corps.
So if you were to describe Emerson's home personality in three words, what would it be? Emerson at home. Emerson off guard. Off duty.
Yeah, exactly. Bold, outspoken, energetic.
Bold, outspoken, and energetic. So those are actually the energies that he does portray in the dream as well.
Absolutely.
Bold, outspoken, and energetic. And right. In his job, when he's with the Marine Corps, does he have to repress any of those, or is he employed in a job which actually enables him to
In the Marine Corps, you just shut up and do what you're told.
Okay.
You're not supposed to grab the mic and then just give your speech.
Funny that, I thought so.
Yeah.
So in a sense, there's Emerson, as you see him in a dream, is an aspect that has this wonderful, bold, outspoken, energetic energy that he can only express sometimes, and at other times, to do his various duties, he has to actually repress all of that.
Right.
Yeah. So it may also, he may represent this part of yourself that's also bold, outspoken, energetic, and he more likely represents a part of yourself that tries to repress those kind of energies from time to time.
That's true, for sure.
Mm. So if we just go back to the beginning of the dream, Jason, so you've had the dream, it's processing the last couple of days, and it's starting off by going, okay, I've been dealing with something that feels bureaucratic, feels organisational, has some connections with, you know, my personal feelings about the military, may even be to do with how much you have to toe the line when you're involved with bureaucratic organisational things versus energies that you may or may not repress within yourself. But straight away, I've got an interview, and there's a female accompanying you. So quite often in the dreams, a female will be your right brain, your more creative, expressive self. And the only reason I'm really mentioning that too is because at the very end of the dream, you're expecting Emerson to come out with something quite creative himself. With, is it a poem? Is it a monologue? But you did say at the end, and I wrote down, you know, it's like, is he a goofball, or what creativity is going to come from his mouth? So this kind of question of creativity and outspoken creativity, or at least expressed creativity, without worry about whether anyone's going to judge you for it, running through the dream.
You know, I'll add something that occurs to me, that the female character in the dream is a friend of mine who I had seen yesterday.
Ah.
And, but yet I haven't seen or talked to Emerson in a few weeks. So So I'm just suddenly struck by that, that it's interesting how the dream material is drawing on someone who I just interacted with and also someone who I haven't spoken to in weeks.
Yeah, that's a really interesting observation, Jason. It's and the reason that Emerson, even though you haven't interacted with him not only within the last 48 hours but for weeks, is that he has been around for most of your life. You refer to him as your younger brother, so we know he hasn't been there for all of your life, but he's been there particularly during your formative years, and he will therefore have very influenced not only you, but you would have influenced him. You've been brought up under presumably similar family environment, so he will deeply symbolise and share some of the beliefs that you have, and will probably also have some beliefs that are very different from yours, but both products of your upbringing. So he will be a pretty, you know, family members are often pretty firm symbols in our psyche to refer to in dreams when we're really looking at me, myself, and some really basic beliefs and thoughts I have about life, or feelings I have about life stretching back to when I was little, will often bring in family members.
Although I should clarify, for the sake of proper dream exploring, Emerson is not my biological little brother.
Oh.
He's my little brother from the Big Brother, Little Brother program, you know, where you get paired up with somebody in the youth who just could use a mentor, or, you know, another role model. So I met Emerson when he was 11, and I've definitely known him for a long time.
Okay.
Eight, 9 years. Not to discount it at all, he's definitely been a part of my life for a long time.
Now that adds an extra dimension as well. Thank you for that. So he's, as you say, hasn't been as influential as, say, a biological brother that had been around since birth, but he's not only been in your life for a long time, but he has obviously been extremely helped and had his own life changed by having you as a big brother mentor as well.
Right. Yeah.
So all your thoughts and feelings about helping people transform and change and supporting other people and comforting other people, because there's a thread of comfort through the dream as well, will also be invested and wrapped up in Emerson as a symbol of all of that as well.
That's really nice, Jane Teresa. That just hits home, because yesterday I had this, you could call it a group sort of meeting around what does Jason want to be when he grows up, and had a lot of conversations about what do I want to be when I grow up, and that's one of the areas that I'm interested in, is being there for other people, like coaching or some sort of guide of some sort, coach / maybe even therapist.
That's excellent, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, you know, a big brother who you've obviously worked with for many years, and presumably you've been a big brother to him because more than so many other people, he needed the help badly, and it would have been amazing help that we imagine that you've given him to bring him through. He was in the little brother program because he really, really, really did need help, and you've obviously done well there. That's a wonderful symbol to bring in your dream for all of that. So we'll look at it. We'll bring that into the dream exploring as we're going, because that is fantastic. What a wonderful person you are. We would all listen and vote already. Yes, you should be coaching and guiding. And if you've been through Big Brother, Little Brother, goodness me, and you pay attention to your dreams as well, you'd be a goodie. The friend that you met yesterday, was she part of that? That what does Jason want to be when he grows up? Talk, or was she? Yeah.
I invited her as part of this small group of people to help me explore this topic.
Mm.
And interestingly enough, she's actually a coworker of mine, and we both work in a very large organization, manufacturing-based company. So there's that corollary to the dream, that we would both be in that environment isn't unusual.
Yes, it is. What three words would you give Jason for her personality? And presumably this is one of the reasons why you invited her into the group, but what three words would you give for her?
Strong popped into my mind right away. So strong, She's logical, strong, logical, and smart.
Strong, logical, and smart. Oh, I can see why you brought her along. So, if we, yes, strong, logical, and smart. Okay, so in a sense, she's probably most likely in the dream because she was the symbol of the discussion that you went through, the exploration that you went through. So she's there as part of that. But she may also be there as the part of yourself that values, strength, logicality, and it's smartness.
It's interesting that she's the one in the interview.
Mm. Yes.
I mean, you brought up the fact that, that maybe Emerson is carefree and willing to take risks, and he feels secure about himself. And that's the type of behavior, that's the type of person you want to be in an interview. Mm. And then there's Clea, my friend, who is smart, logical, and strong. And that's... that's more attributes you also want.
That's right. That's so right. And it's interesting too that there are many women as women and as like men who are strong, logical, and smart. But when you're talking about a woman in a dream as a female entity, or as a part of your female side, whether you're a man or a woman, we have the female side and the male side, the female side being the right brain, the creativity, etc. So the yin, so the attributes you think of when you think female side, right brain, yin, you're going creativity, intuition, curvy lines, not straight lines, emotions, feelings. You're not actually going strong, logical, and smart. They're more what you would expect from the male side. So it's interesting that even in her character, even though she's the one that goes into the interview, and as you say, those are the characteristics you want to send to the interview, strong, logical, and smart, but she's actually the creative side. So she's pretty well integrated,
Right. This is true. Yeah, that's interesting.
So, to flip that, it's probable that you're also strong, you can be strong, logical, and smart, but it's also okay to have all the female or the female side, the creative characteristics flowing as well and well integrated.
Right. Talk about my dreams and such.
Yeah, which you do. But what I really like there in the dream, right at the beginning still, is the fact that you get tempted by the sweeties.
Yes, they seem to appear out of nowhere.
Yeah. So, in a sense, because I was going to say that's like the little boy in the sweetie shop, but you just said, what I wrote it down, what does Jason want to be when he grows up? So, the dreaming brain, to some extent, being a little bit logical, is going to, when he grows up, what do you mean when he grows up? Oh, we're talking about a little boy. Oh, well, a little boy would just want to be in a sweetie shop, wouldn't he? Come into my little sweetie shop, little boy.
That's
now, what do you
right.
want to be?
Don't go into this interview. What are you doing? Getting a job? Have some chocolate.
And while you're in there, have a think about Emerson. Like, he was only 11 when he was a little boy, too. And you managed to bring Emerson, you've managed to grow Emerson into a fine young man. You could apply and you helped bring Emerson and grow Emerson up to be something, presumably, more than he would otherwise have been. So if you can do that for Emerson, you could do that for little Jason.
Yeah. Hope so.
I think you can, but I still want to come back to the sweetie shop. Because what I thought, and you probably noticed it when you said it, you said, there were sweets on display. They were on display. There were samples. And then when you thought, oh, this is really comfortable, I'm going to crawl into a nice little place, nap here, cozy, etc., you became self-conscious that you were on display. So we've got that theme again there, but part of me is really comfortable here and cozy, and I feel at home and I feel really good. And the other part of me feels self-conscious and on display. Which sort of goes back to the idea right at the end of the dream of Emerson not really caring about being on display when he picked up that microphone. He was going to do what he wanted to do regardless of the judgment of the audience, whether there was any audience there at all. He just did it because he wanted to. It didn't have a component of what is the image, what have I got on display here, do I need to be self-conscious about this. It's just he is represented in the dream, and isn't it lovely that he's a part of yourself, because everyone in a dream is a part of yourself. There's a part of yourself that is quite happy with just doing his own thing and being as creative and outspoken and poetic in what you want to broadcast, and you don't mind whether anybody hears it or thousands of people hear it, because you feel comfortable and secure in that, versus the part of yourself that doesn't like being on display.
That's an interesting combination. Not on display.
And of course, when you go into any business, you know, I mean, you've mentioned coaching and guiding and therapists, and there's no, when you are actually doing the coaching and doing the guiding and doing the therapy or whatever it is that you choose, when you're in the moment and doing that, there's no question of self-consciousness, no question of being on display. It doesn't come into it. You're in the moment doing the job, and I'm sure you do that really well. But there are outside parameters of that regarding display and image. You know, how do I promote the business? How do other people see me? What do other people think of me? What do I think of myself doing this? These are all image / like on display issues.
Yeah, absolutely. The self-conscious part doesn't entirely go away, does it?
No. But you can soften it a lot and take it away and see your way around it. If you were Emerson.
If I was Emerson, true.
Or if you were the little boy in the sweetie shop and, you know, you just did the lovely bit about being comfortable, crawling in, having a nap, feeling cozy, enjoying the sweeties, and just stopping short of that bit where he went, oh, but I feel self-conscious now.
Exactly. Too many sweets. I'm way too comfortable. I must be doing something bad.
That's right. So, you know, you might like to think back in your life to some time where you felt that you'd maybe hit the sweet spot and thought to yourself, this is too easy, this is too comfortable, because for all the reasons that you've just reflected back there, Jason, but also because at that part of the dream, when you felt self-conscious about being on display, you said, I wrote it down, not attending, not on task, I've got to get back to work. So you might sort of think, you know, was there a time earlier in your life where you felt, I've really hit the sweet spot, I'm so comfortable, I'm so cozy, I so love this, but, oh, I should be really attending to tasks and getting back to work. You can't have it both ways, a little part in yourself within you says. You know, you can't be on task and doing a really good job and feel comfortable and cozy too. That doesn't work. How are you responding to this?
I really like how you took that play of words, because I've heard in other segments of your podcast and on dreams of how the dreams like to play on words. So the sweets and the sweet spot and feeling comfortable when you're in that sweet spot. You just get into a zone, and I was really comfortable, but at some point you come out of it. And I like the suggestion you make of, well, when in my life was I in a sweet spot? And so it just gives me a moment of pause and like, well, yeah, when was I in my sweet spot? And what happened? Did I become self-conscious? What pulled me out of that sweet spot?
And can you think when that was?
Oh, goodness gracious. It's kind of what just jumped into my mind was there was a period of time when I was really into swing dancing. I'm an engineer by day, and I was swing dancer by night. And it was sort of a sweet spot. I was doing this thing that I absolutely loved, and I was doing the day job kind of just because it was the responsible thing and what you're supposed to do as an adult. And I was also doing this dance that over time became a very much a sweet spot. But I haven't looked at the was there a self-conscious aspect to it? Why do I not do it as much anymore? So I think that's a good place for me to kind of explore.
Yeah, it is. So yeah, Perfect. So do some exploring of that later, and you'll be interested in what comes out. That's so beautiful. And I love the way that you said when you did the engineering part, it was like that was like being the responsible adult thing. So, you know, you've got running through the dream here, the risk. I won't take a risk. I won't, like Emerson, slide down those three levels. I'll walk down. I don't want to take the risk. So risk-free, responsible. I don't know. Actually, responsibility isn't risk-free, is it? But it jumped out to me when you mentioned it. So there might be something in there too. So in a sense, Jason, in a sense, you did have both then. You had the sweet spot and you had the work that, you know, you had the focus on the work. You had both. And maybe there's sometimes you can have it all sweet, you know, rather than seeing the division. And maybe other times you want a bit of both. But you've got all the things there to explore, which is just really lovely. And I love the way that when I said to you, when in your life do you remember being in the sweet spot? And you said, I don't know, but what jumped into mind is. And for everyone listening in, you'll often find that when you're looking at your own dreams or talking to someone else about their dream, there's a feeling that they're going to respond, as you did, Jason, and there's a feeling like, no, that's not logical, maybe that's not the first time, but this thing has jumped into my head. Well, that memory or thought that jumps into your head, it really is the one to pursue, because while you're discussing a dream and you're actually discussing the symbols around the dream, your unconscious mind that produced the dream is very much engaged, and it is the one that is helping you out by coming up with the right stuff, and the pictures that jump in are the key ones to look at.
Right.
Yeah.
Trust the first thing that jumps into your mind and don't just automatically dismiss it as hogwash.
Exactly. Don't dismiss it as hogwash, and don't dismiss it as, what was the word you gave Emerson? Goofball. Yeah. trust that side of yourself more. If someone gave you the microphone outside the not the pentagon, trust yourself that what's going to come out is going to be right, which is an element of coaching and guiding and therapy, isn't it? I mean, you train and you train and you train and train, but when you actually come to a session with someone, just as you would have done when you came to mentor Emerson as a little brother, when you come to the moment, you bring everything you've got, you let go, you see what happens, you trust, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I continually pull in the dance metaphor when I start thinking about these ideas, because like anything, when you become good at it, it becomes muscle memory almost. And it's not so much conscious thought. You're dancing with the whole situation. So I can just imagine in even dream work that you do, or therapy work, it's a dance with the client. You're continually taking their move and then moving with them. So I like that as a metaphor.
Yeah, it's a beautiful metaphor, and thank you for that. You really described that beautifully. Could you say that if you look at Emerson sliding down those three levels, which were, he made it, he was free, he was easy, he made it, but as you said, the opposite of that in the dream was kind of like, I'll get this slowly, I don't want to hurt my back, I'll walk down. Could there be, if you followed that metaphor which you gave there, could there be a way to dance down, which is where between your thoughts about your back and Emerson's sort of yee-haw thoughts, that you actually do a dance, that you trust and you do a dance down the three levels?
Yeah. I mean, just as you brought this back, I just thought of a different way you could slide down. Emerson sat on his butt and slid down the roof and landed each time on his tuchus.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at him thinking, ow, that's really going to hurt your spine. But, you know, why not stand up and slide down and hop from level to level and use your, you know, use your knees, use your whole body as a way to go down and not just your tuchus.
Fantastic. So it's a kind of dance. It's a meeting of two opposites, a blending, a melding, an integrating, a way that does it beautifully and gracefully and reads the moment and is in the moment too.
Yeah, definitely looking at it from a different perspective and going, hey, I don't have to do it that way. Mm. There's another way of approaching this, and I can do it maybe in my own fashion.
Yes.
Emerson wanted to sit on his tuchus and slide down and do it what looked like really painfully, but I could do it a little bit more gracefully.
Exactly. Yeah. With more ease and more enjoyment too. You would enjoy going down that way.
That's true. That's true. Because I'd be able to stand when I got to the bottom.
That's right. So it is risk free, but in a more flowing and perhaps more of a sweetie shop way as well.
Right.
And it ends well, because the very next thing that happens when you both get to the bottom of that building, and let's imagine this time that you've taken the way that you so beautifully described then, is the microphone opportunity.
The time to let it all hang out.
Yeah. And I think you really got that, Jason, from your responses in how we just talked about that earlier, that what Emerson represents there at the end. You know, your question was, is he a goofball, or what creative thing is going to come out? You know, a poem, of course, you know, there's two ways to write a poem. One is very fast without even thinking about it, and that can be really bad, and it can be really good. And there are poems that you can spend a million years writing, but as you write the poem, it's very much written in the flow, in the moment. So, you know, there's that feeling. But I think the essence of the end of that dream was you were really interested in what was coming out of Emerson's mouth, and you noticed at the very end that, hey, there are actually people beginning to congregate, so maybe this is good stuff, or your unconscious mind is allowing for, this is actually going to be quite good, so I'll just bring on some extras in my dream now to listen to this, because this is going to be good. And, you know, you said a feeling of expectation and even excitement. So, you know, this is the part of yourself that is in many ways ready to take the microphone, but the essence of the resolution that your dream came to, you know, you did this, I'm only reflecting it back to you. The essence of the resolution that your dream came to was, you know, if I'm happy, saying what I want to say, being who I want to be, doing what I want to do, curtailing that for thought of anyone's judgment, or curtailing that for the thought of, will one person turn up or will millions of people turn up, it's kind of beside the point.
Right.
It's really what I want to do for myself, and feeling secure and comfortable to measure the response of that in terms of how I feel doing it and how good I feel that I allow myself to develop and do this, rather than measure that in terms of what other people think or whether I end up with one client or a million clients.
Yeah, that's really great. I really like the way you unfolded that.
Mm.
One other thing that has struck me is that I never heard the poem. And when you said a poem, it can, you know, it could be a short poem that took 5 minutes to write out, or it could take a lifetime.
Mm.
And it just struck me that I didn't hear the poem, and maybe that's because it's still to be written, and it's a lifetime of development that will create the poem.
That is beautiful.
So that just sort of landed on me when you said that, so I thought I'd share.
You and I are dancing through this interpretation so well.
Very well.
So you've given me the most wonderful idea for your dream alchemy. Because, you know, what you have here is, you know, as I said, your dream has come to a beautiful conclusion. It has explored a lot of issues, at least unconsciously. And in you and I talking about it today, we've brought a lot more of that into your conscious awareness, so that you can say, oh yes, that's the point, I'll work with that, I'll go with that. And then we bring in the dream alchemy, which is, as you know, is the way of using symbols or doing things that kind of work with the dream to, in this case, amplify the outcome. We really want to make you feel more comfortable about being in the world, in that sense of not really about it all being about you feeling comfortable about what you're doing, and not looking at being on display or self-conscious or judgment of people. So we really want to do a dream alchemy to reinforce that in many ways. And so when you came up with the idea there of the poem being something that will, you begin it, but it takes a lifetime to develop and create, I'm thinking, depending on how you feel, whether a dream alchemy for you might be to do that thing, which as a possible.
You're not going to make me stand up in front of a bunch of people.
No,
well,
sign not
a poem, are you?
No, but if you sound any more cautious, I might. No, I'm going to be so much more gentle, Jason. You know that kind of exercise that is so well known in therapy circles about imagine you're in the last year of your life, or imagining you're 103 and you're reviewing your life, look back and see how did you get from A to B. You know that one?
Yes.
I'm thinking that you could be at the imagine yourself in the closing verses of your poem. So it's not finished yet. You haven't finished your life's work. You know, it will continue to evolve and write itself with verses and repetitive choruses until you choose to stop. But to imagine yourself several verses towards the end, at the age of any age, pick an age, give me an age, Jason.
93.
At 93. At age 93, that you sit down with a piece of paper or your keyboard and you look at, you're just reviewing the poem that you've written and all this time, this lifetime work that you've developed. And you're just reviewing it and you're looking back and you're saying, so isn't that interesting? And just reflecting upon it and thinking, look, I see how I got to where I am now. I got to where I am now by when I did this, or when I took that attitude, or when I took that first step, or when I allowed myself to do that, that got me from A to B. And oh, look, when I did something else, that got me from B to M, did a big jump there. And kind of just imagine your way through looking back and saying, how did I get, what were the things I did, what were the attitudes I had, what did I allow myself to do that got me to this stage in my poem? And, you know, and if you think about it too logically, it'll be too hard. You know, the idea with Dream Alchemy is to really, to some extent, to do it fast, to do it goofball, to take a note from Emerson, just grab the microphone and just do it. And that lets your unconscious mind, or the more creative part of yourself, just have a field day. And because I'm not going to ask you to grab the microphone and speak this out in front of anybody, you're free to just have a ball with it. What do you think?
I think it sounds great. I actually might grab a microphone. I've fallen onto this dictation software that, you know, you can speak into, and it types it out on the screen. It's actually kind of fun, so maybe I'll give it a go, but not with the, you know, hundreds of people of audience.
I love it. That's a great idea, because what you're doing there is, you know, definitely actually incorporating another symbol from the dream, you know, so that really hammers home the alchemical side of it too.
Yeah, boy, that's great. I hadn't thought about that, but that's really cool.
Yeah.
Bring that from the dream world into...
See, the conscious part of you hadn't thought of that, but the unconscious part of you came up with the idea, and then it consciously, in retrospect, oh, that's interesting. Yes, yeah, so our unconscious mind is always way, way ahead of us.
Yeah, if we could only have the conversation more. I wish I could remember the conversations better. You know how they're like vapor. You wake up, you're like, wait, where'd it go? Oh, it's fading.
Well, you remembered this one extremely well, you know, and to everyone listening in, Jason's been lined up for this particular date for 2 weeks, actually. And hey, you a dream delivered last night, and you remembered it in a lot of detail, so there you go. Thanks for being a guest on the Dream Show again, Jason. It's been fantastic to have you here, and I know that you're going to go a long way.
Well, thank you very much, Jane Treason. It's been my pleasure to be on the Dream Show. Thank you for all the insights to this dream.
Thank you. I think one of the loveliest things out of very, very, very many of the discussion with Jason there about his dream was the way that he beautifully illustrated how the unconscious mind takes part in these dream discussions. You know, like the bit where, oh, this just jumped into my mind, and sometimes some ideas, and at the end there where he mentioned, oh, I could do it on my voice microphone software thingy. You know, his unconscious mind was ahead of him, was going, yeah, use the microphone, symbol from the dream. So I can't emphasize enough, because I find it both fascinating and a helpful tip to give you, that when you're really deeply in the depths of talking about a dream that you've had, even if you're just in a room talking it out loud to yourself, so instead of just reading your dream journal, sit and have a conversation with yourself. It's okay, you can do this, it's dream work. And just listen to the contributions that your conscious mind, unconscious mind will make. The reason it joins in so very readily is that you are talking about the symbols from your dream, you're talking about feelings from your dream, you're talking about how your own dreaming brain and unconscious mind has just processed the last couple of days. So you're right in the moment. Your unconscious mind is fully engaged, even though it's a bit unconscious from your conscious mind, and it is really actively taking part and contributing. So if you've got that little edge of being able to interpret what it's saying with you, or as Jason said there, to trust what jumps in your mind, you really are getting that extra mileage out of your unconscious mind. And once you practice that a lot and you really get that going, you'll notice that you can apply the same kind of techniques to everyday situations. Sometimes when you're just living your life or having a conversation or just sitting in the moment and having a look around or even doing a meditation, that things may sometimes jump out at you. And if you consider for a moment that they might jump out of you at you from your unconscious mind, and they might be a little bit symbolic, and you might look at them through the looking glass of looking at a dream, then you can find that information very, very enlightening. You've had enough to enlighten you. You may even be on information overload now, so I'm going to let you go. The next show will be out in 4 weeks' time. That will be episode 136, which will come out on the 8th of March. If you're in Australia, on the 7th of the March, if you're just about anywhere else in the world. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy the next 4 weeks. Just a reminder of the websites again, if you haven't been or you haven't been for a long time, dream.net.au and janetheresa.com. Remember, particularly at the blog at janetheresa.com, you can opt to receive, either by RSS or by email, an update. You know, any blog I post can come straight to you by email, so you might want to arrange that as well. Thank you. Share the show. Have a lovely 4 weeks and lots of fantastic dreams. And if you'd like to be a guest on the show, please email me, and that will be fantastic. See you again. I'm Jane Teresa Anderson.
The Dream Show is a production of Jane Teresa Anderson for the Lifestyle Pod Network. You can find more great podcasts like this one in the Lifestyle Pod Network section of iTunes.